Devices Radio Network.
When it comes to the day of the contest, I'm his father. He comes to me for advices. So it's not that hard to give him the wrong advices.
Welcome back to Advices Radio. I'm Scott McNally, and with me today, back again on the mic, is Prady from AZUP. We're going to take this in a couple different directions today. We had him before. We talked about nootropics general last time, and we talked about specific compounds and how to combine them, the effects that you'll get from them. Today we're going to go in a little different direction. We are going to talk about business. We're going to talk about how Prady has put this whole thing together, and I want to learn a little bit more about his life, because Prady, I've seen you all over the internet, you know, really doing an awesome job with the work you've done promoting the product, and I know it's because you believe in it. You know, we are doing the Unsung Heroes segment every week over at Bodybuilding Nerds, and I find that especially to be exceptionally creative. I know you're working tirelessly. You basically get this product out same day. So, first of all, welcome to the show. And then second, how do you make the time in the day to do all this?
Dude, Scott, it's such a pleasure to be back on the show. We're kind of talking off air a little bit, and you know, we go back and forth with, you know, on email, and now, you know, being able to be back on the show, it's such a pleasure. And I do want to quickly just say this, because we were talking about this too, is how much you've grown the show. And because I travel quite extensively, go to different gyms, and even in my own gym, and the amount of times that I hear people talk about advices or BNR is like, cool. It's amazing. And it's funny too, because I get people, sometimes I go in to meet retailers for AZUP and put it on their shelves, and they're like, oh, I think, are you the guy that was on that Advices Radio episode? Yeah, dude. And it's funny, because, you know, you always think like people are going to know you for, you know, whether it's one of my other ventures or from anything like that, but people know me through Advices. It's so cool. So I wanted to thank you for that. And, you know, I think like a lot of us as listeners, and this kind of ties into, I guess, what we want to talk about too today, is where, you know, when you're a consumer of like products, you kind of just expect stuff to be there. You know, it's like a Friday or Thursday or whenever all these episodes come out, we kind of just expect, all right, it's going to be on iTunes. Like I wait for it. But we sometimes forget like the amount of work that goes behind it. Like, yeah. And it's not just like, I think starting is very difficult. And a lot of people talk about like hardest to start, to get motivated to start. But my thing always has been about endurance. I think that's sometimes more important than starting, because a lot of us sometimes can muster all the energy we have to start something. But pulling yourself to be motivated throughout the whole journey, that is the difficult part. And it shows, like, for instance, what you guys have done with Advices and all the other you know, podcasts you're involved with, is like you're consistently producing content like on a timely fashion. And like that is the stuff that takes you further and further. And you might not see the results right away.
Right.
But you will see them. And all of a sudden, like after a year or two producing content, producing products, that return will, you know, will come back to you. And this is the general kind of topic about delaying instant gratification for something that's out there that's bigger than what you know at the moment. And then the other thing, too, is just about consistency and endurance. So I wanted to just start the show with saying how cool and awesome it is and honored I am to be, you know, playing a part, you know, being part of this episode and having to get to know you over the past year or two. And also I'm excited about this episode today. You know, we as bodybuilders are super, super industrious, right? A lot of us have to, you grow up and you don't have a lot of, you can't just go outside and ask your neighbor, hey, how do I carb deplete for a show? What sodium should I take? They don't know what the hell you're talking about, you know, like. We as bodybuilders, like we have to go out and seek information. So we have to be kind of, you know, to go on these podcasts, you have to go on these, on the forums. We can't just like open up anything and find that information. So that makes, what I've noticed from a lot of bodybuilders and people in our community is that they're super industrious and they're very entrepreneurial. Because you have to, as an entrepreneur, you have to do the most you can with limited resources when you start off, and you have to seek out as much as you can, you know, initially. And that's why this show is this cool, because what I want to do on this episode is kind of delve a little bit into AZUP, what it takes to kind of start a company. And it's cool because we at AZUP are not, we're not a you know, a multi-million dollar or, you know, billion dollar company in a stretch. But we're a small business still. And I definitely want to talk to people about the kind of the journey of what it takes to get the ground running and have a sustainable business. Because a lot of companies, when I do interviews, because I do a couple of other speaking panels from other businesses I'm involved in, you know, the other guys on the speaking panels are like, you know, running $100 million companies and billion dollar companies. And the people in the audience, they just want to get started out. And they're like, they can't relate to that right away because it's not relatable, right? It looks far away. So I think what's cool is what I always want to do is I want to talk about, hey, like what it takes to just get the ground running and have like a sustainable business. So you retain a little bit of income and profit and you can reinvest it back and it's sustainable because that's the hard part too. And I kind of tie it in with overall success and motivation, man. And so that's what I kind of want to lead the show, man. I'm super excited to do that.
Well, I love that. And then my second question is how do you find the time, man? Because you're doing a lot. And I think that that's the number one thing. I think everybody wants to do something. And like we were talking about before the show, it might not be start a supplement company. It might be something completely different. Like the thing is that to me, I find you to be a big inspiration. And starting a supplement company is not my primary goal in life at this moment. I actually might be putting a product out later this year. But in general, I'm inspired by you just by how much you're putting in. I understand there's only so many hours of the day. And I feel like the point is to make things a priority. But can you talk a little bit more about that and about how you find the time to do everything it takes to grow as rapidly as you are and to think as creatively as you are on a regular basis, day in, day out?
For sure, man. I think this is this is really important. It's why I got into Azith in the first place. Peak productivity and what really productivity is all about. And for me, I think it all started off as like, number one, it has to come from a willingness, right? It has to come from a drive. And people ask like, what is drive really? And the way I describe drive is it's an energy, man. Like it's an energy that you can that just curses through, you know, your bloodstream and gets shit done. And that's really what it's about. It's about execution. And for me, that drive really comes from, you know, when I was growing up, I come from really a humble background. I'm actually the first person in my family that was able to graduate high school. Nice. And then, so I went to college and law school. So I always had, had a pretty tough time growing up and, was really fortunate enough to be able to come to this country and be able to really flourish. But that background that I had, that kind of, blue collar work ethic that a lot of us talk about in bodybuilding, I think that definitely is the drive that wants me always to be never satisfied. You always want more. Mm. And that's one thing. And the second thing, of course, is just about this concept of execution. And this is really important because in our kind of in our generation, and I'm still 26, so I still I can still a lot of the, you know, younger kind of professionals and stuff. And what I see a lot of times is
I didn't realize you're 26, by the way.
Yeah, I mean it's there's a ton of distractions, man. Not just for people our age, but just in general. In our society, I think what most of us are doing in 2018, 17 is like society of consumers, right? The first thing we do is kind of. We're all guilty of this. That is, do this too. We wake up and we check our phones. We go on Twitter and Facebook. We spend time doing irrelevant things on there. We spend times looking at other people's lives, other people's like pets. And then every 1 hour we have to pull up our phones and we have to make sure someone liked our stuff. And then we read like stuff that doesn't apply to us, or people are like obsessed with the news. And yeah, sure, that it's good, but it's also like giving you information that it's not going to affect your life at all. And the concept that I'm trying to draw here, man, is that a lot of us spend a ton of time on other things and other people that are not giving us an ROI. And as an entrepreneur, you always have to think about the most valuable commodity. People always talk about money, but I don't think that's the most valuable commodity. The most valuable commodity in your life is time. Hmm. Money comes and goes. Like you lose a ton of money and it sucks. Like someone can steal that money away from you, but you can earn it back. Your time, you can't. Like once it's gone, it's literally taken from you, and it's never coming back. So, I think, you know, ask the question about how to be productive. It's about really taking a good look. When I started at what I'm doing, and so when I started Azith, I was actually in law school. I was a full-time law school student. I started Azith on the side, and I was still also at two other part-time jobs that I was doing. So it was a lot. It was a lot to handle. But what I really did is I knew that I wanted to tackle all these things. I knew I wanted to do it. That's the first thing. I was like, I know what it's going to take and I know I want to do it. And the second thing is like really taking a good look of where I'm actually spending my time. And that meant like dude, cutting off, like, spending time, like I said, all the stuff that people spend time on, like, whether it's spending time on social media or texting or any of the stuff that's not giving me an immediate ROI on my time, I would literally cut those things out. And I do think,
let me back you up just a second here. 'Cause something that I was talking to somebody about recently, and this kind of relates. So you knew specifically that you wanted to do something with supplements?
Yeah. So I, as you know, we initially started with campus-elite.com and, right. and I wanted to get involved in supplements. But what I actually wanted to do was to create something different in the fitness industry space, in the fitness space.
So it was more general at the time. And the reason I ask this is because I feel like a lot of people want to do something, but they don't even know what it is.
Yes. Yes. That's key, man. knowing what it is that you want to do. For me, it wasn't as like defined. Like I definitely want to do create a supplement company, but I wanted to always do something in health and fitness because that's like my number one passion. And then I saw the opportunity to create dietary supplements, and that kind of led me to that thing. But I had planned every single thing. Like it's been a little bit over a year with Azit, and I had planned the whole journey from the day. I mean, I still have the first few papers that I was writing off my business plan. And I had everything written down, like how much it's going to cost, like where I'm going to go, what my retailers are going to be. And obviously you're never going to follow everything by plan because stuff changes. But I had written it down, like what it's going to really take. And a lot of people who start businesses don't really do that. I know a lot of people who are super into entrepreneurship. They see all these cool stuff about how much money you can make and all that. But one thing that I recognize with a lot of them is because I have them, hey, like you want to come work for me a little bit or you want to intern a little bit. And after a while, when they do the stuff that it requires, they tell me, Preddy, I got to be honest, man. I don't want to live your life. Like, I don't want to do what you do. It's honestly not much fun and it sucks. And I've heard a lot of people say that your life sucks. And that's because they don't really want to do that. It just it seems really cool. But you really have to define and really think about what it is that you really, really, really want. But you have to, people say this all the time, and it's almost cliche, but you really have to love the journey because the winning aspect of it is so, it's so short, man. Like you can't just be focused. You can't just be like, I want to just do this because of that 1 minute I'm going to be on stage, that 30 seconds that someone's going to, you know, call me out the winner, but it's still the prep that you got to do for 20 weeks. So that's the hard part. The getting on stage is literally for 20 seconds. So how do you structure your desire where it's like, I'm okay with doing all the work for a 20-second reward? So you have to be either, you're going to be kind of crazy or you've got to love the journey. So those two things are important. You got to love it. Yep.
I agree. For me, it was a little different with Advices because I didn't know that it was going to be a podcast at first. Mm-hmm. I just knew that I wanted to do something and I kind of just intuitively followed the path until it kind of materialized, I guess. But that's interesting. Yeah. You knew this from the start. You knew you wanted to do something with supplements, and you even had a plan right from the beginning. I it doesn't surprise me at all. I'm not shocked, that's for sure.
Yeah, and of course, things will change, right? Is that you pivot and you move ahead and you do different things. I mean, one of the things that a lot of the kind of the early on, you know, listeners who were listening to the previous episode where I was on, was I think it's almost like, 10 or 11 months ago, but we had the first product of Azoth, and dude, it was crazy. And so some people already know about this, but yeah, I woke up one day and PayPal and the Bank of America had decided to just literally like seize the bank account and everything. And so what that meant is, yeah, all the assets were gone, literally everything. And it's actually been it's going to be close to 6-7 months now, and I still haven't gotten the money back, and I probably won't.
And so, this was for the listeners, that two of the compounds that you were using, our government decided that they were no longer going to let you sell them as a supplement. And once they made that decision, they just decided, well, we're also going to take all your money too.
Yeah, it's crazy how it worked, and it's funny because like both of the ingredients, those were Nupept and phenylparacetam. They're still available, and they're not necessarily like banned, outright. But I think what's happening now is because the FDA and the regular, you know, guys that do all the regulation part, they're recognizing that supplement companies aren't just not complying with them. So what they're doing instead is they're going and working with the payment vendors. They're just going to PayPal and to Stripe and Square, like, hey, if you guys see anything on that website, just shut their account down. And that way it's a great way for it to enforce compliance. So kudos for them to figure that out, how to get our shit together. So,
that had to be just such a blow to you though. I feel like a lot of people might have quit at that point.
Yeah, it was definitely really tough, man, because I didn't know, like, all the funds were in there that we had, made at the time, and we were doing really good, well with business, and I had two other people involved that are helping me out, and they, I remember it was a really tough discussion. It was, like, middle of, like, June, July. I was just right about to graduate from law school, and they were like, hey, Preddy, like, I just don't see how I can continue. So they both actually bounced. So wow. I had, so I literally was alone, had no team. So I had to literally start completely from scratch. So there went my plan that I wrote on that piece of paper to some extent. But what kept me going, man, and this is important, and something that I started off this podcast with, but is endurance. One thing that's going to propel success in life is be the last man standing. We can have all this skill and success and talent. We see this in bodybuilding so many times. It's people with freaky genetics and just like people that like they're just like meant to do this stuff, but they just can't handle the mental stuff and they can't be the last man standing. So you start and you just don't. You don't quit and you are just someone who's just an animal and just sees what's on the other side. It just doesn't matter. Whatever life throws your way. I always see it as like when stuff goes wrong or when I fail, I think always it's like the universe or life's way of testing me whether I really want this stuff or not. So I knew like when that happened, I was like, shit, like I have to figure out like the whole funding of this thing from scratch. I don't have a team and how am I going to like run a whole supplement company by myself? And we had like customers that are ordering and like, what do I tell them? Yeah. So I guess the easy way would have been just like, all right, like we're out in peace, but I knew that I wanted to do this. And, I was just so dedicated to building Azoth that, for some reason, man, and I, at that moment, I didn't actually know what to do, but I just like, you know what, I'm going to figure it out. Mm. And, I did, man. And, it worked out just fine. And we've much exceeded all those profits and revenues like 10 or 15 times now of what we're doing at that stage. So it's at a point like, where I don't need that back.
I feel like, too, this is part of what I mean by that you have to think creatively on a daily basis because, obviously you had this game plan. And I think that that's another thing, too. I talked not too long ago on the show here. We talked about being able to change and being resilient. And I think that that's what you're expressing right now is not locking yourself into that initial plan and being creative. And what was it that you did? You found other supplements then to replace these. And honestly, I mean, I feel like the product is great now. It's hard for me to compare it and say whether it's better or, it's a little different, but I like it. And it definitely, if anything, I feel like, now what have you put in here to replace those things? Because I feel like I get a little bit more pep. And I think one of those is the DMHA.
Yeah, so the DMHA, so what I did is right off the bat, I was like, look, I don't want ever this to happen again. So I removed anything that could potentially be questionable in the future. And I knew that one of the ways to actually make this profitable was to be able to pivot away down the line from just selling to hardcore bodybuilders, but also to sell to the mainstream audience. And what's cool about nootropics is that most of the other supplements that we see as sports nutrition supplements, they kind of start with the bodybuilding audience and then they go, to the mainstream. But what's happened with nootropics, it's one of the first time dietary supplements have actually started from the the mainstream part of society and then kind of trickled their way. I still don't think they're not very mainstream in bodybuilding at all. So it's like, cool, it has had the opposite effect. And so I knew like there's an audience for this more than just hardcore bodybuilders. So I removed everything that could potentially be, that could get me pulled off the shelves and stuff like that. Because I saw an opportunity to get into big box retailers, get into the Walmarts and get into, CVS and Rite Aid. And so to answer your question, that was a hard move to do because as a bodybuilder, like I love like some of the more hardcore and edgy stuff, man. That's what keeps us going. So I want to make sure that we can still have the same effect. So one of the things I was able to do was to up some of the doses what we already had there, and then I added in sulbutamine for 400 milligrams, and then I also added phosphatidylserine, which wasn't in there before. And a last thing as a kicker, I added Theory Queen. So I got a license from the guys over there to basically put in their patented product.
Okay.
In Asda. So we're pretty excited to be able to do that. And what that did is it made it still, I wanted to have, for me, it was always about setting the gold standard of whatever you do. Like whether it was like when I was starting off, like as a kid, I was, you know, cleaning dishes or at a car wash. Like I prided myself with being the best. Like when people said, you know, trained other interns, they were like, yeah, like you got to be like Preddy one day. Like that was my gold standard, no matter what it was that I did, yeah. It was making like minimum wage or not. So when I got into Nootropics game, I was like, I still want to have the gold standard of Nootropics, even though now this one is the first version, which was absolutely amazing, got banned. And I was still able to do that because we still have the highest doses from any other nootropic on the market, period. There's nothing that competes with it yet. And if it does, then I'll change my formula.
Nice. So tell me a little bit more about how this, you know, I'm still focusing on this day to day.
Yeah.
You're also you run excuse me customer service as well. Yes. Think I from what I've talked to you. Okay, that's what I thought. I feel like that's a job in its own right there.
Yeah, it's definitely very it's very tricky because it requires a lot of time, and there's no doubt about that. I actually all of our customer like phone lines and emails. So I have other people that will initially handle it. Like it will, but they will just send it to me they'll just organize it and send it to me. So okay. I respond to every single one of them by email myself. And I also, when someone calls in, I pick up the phone and I answer, you know, all the questions. And it kind of helps because I have a photographic memory. So when people ask me about their order, their order number, I know where the order really is. So I check on every single order, and wow. Yeah, we're talking about at this point it's thousands. So I check every single 2 hours. I check where it is and what the update is. And so when someone calls, I can pull off right away. And this is just the small stuff. And people ask like, why do you do it? It doesn't make like it's not time efficient and stuff. But I do think it matters because. One other thing I really wanted to do with supplements, man, in the game is to kind of be kind of make customers feel part of the industry more. I feel like there was a huge disconnect. I mean, there's this disconnect where customers felt like, I mean, the cool thing about bodybuilding for me is the small like kind of close knit community we have. I love being able to just like, I just email you and like you'll respond and you like this great podcaster, man, and that's awesome. Like you and Veej, like you guys just respond to me and or other guys in the industry, like I'll talk to supplement owners and literally respond to me. And I'm in other industries right now, whether it's, you know, I invest in tech and real estate, and it's just there's no small community in that. And I felt like I started picking this up where a lot of people felt like bigger corporations were taking over a lot of the smaller supplement companies, and they were losing that interpersonal connection, and customers didn't feel part of the brand anymore. And I wanted to kind of change that. So the question really is, how do you scale and how do you keep this going? Like as you get into the hundreds of thousands of orders and a million orders. But the answer is, I don't have, the exact answer to that, but okay. I do know. And my plan is that I will always be super hands-on. And if that means that I have to take less business or less retail accounts, which I've said no to, then so be it, because I definitely see the value in that.
Interesting. Yeah, I just kind of wanted to go off on that tangent for a second, but I want to back up for a second here because you were talking about replacing, you know, certain supplements with other supplements.
Yeah.
And I know that this is a product that you put your heart into this, and
yes.
I know that, like you said, this is something that you are doing because you truly believe in it, and you're using the doses that you want to use. We've heard issues of other companies in the past that. You know, had label claims that weren't being met. How can you ensure that the customer is getting what they're asking for?
Yeah, this is tough because there's a ton of supplement manufacturers out there, and they will constantly try to get your business, and that's kind of normal. But what's really what's going to happen is a lot of them are going to have like really attractive prices, and you know you're going to have to shop around. You set up a formula. And you're going to be able to find it. I mean, you can just go on Google and find a tons of like supplement manufacturers, and you just like send them your quote. But I have like a checklist of what I do in order to ensure that the quality is there, because the truth really is, like, if you don't if it's not a quality product, and if it's not meeting the label requirement, what's going to happen is people are just not going to feel it work. And if people don't feel it work, it's the death of you. And especially in nootropics, because people don't know what to expect with nootropics. So.
Yeah.
they have no like litmus test for it. And so if they don't feel anything, they're like, this is crap. Like, I don't want to take it. So for me, one of the things was every single manufacturer that I shopped around for quotes, I made sure, number one, they have to have all the standard certifications, whether it's CGMP, make sure they get audited by the FDA, and make sure the FDA is registered. Another thing that's super key, a lot of these supplement manufacturers actually don't produce their supplements. They're actually brokers. So they'll get your quote, really? And then they'll actually ship it to another manufacturer, cough, cough, High Tech. So High Tech basically has a monopoly on the space. And I've worked with High Tech several times, and they're great. But it's better to go directly to them instead of going through the brokers, because when you go through the brokers, number one, you spend an extra amount to get to pay the broker's fee, and you don't know,
I'm sure,
that you're doing that. And then the other is that you can't always enforce, compliance, even though it's coming from another manufacturer, because you don't know exactly where they're getting it from. Maybe it's High Tech, maybe it's China, you don't know. So you're looking at the website and it says, oh, it's an American, we create a supplements, quote unquote, in America. So you're like, oh, it's an American supplement manufacturer. You send them a quote, takes like 6 weeks to get back, and you don't know, but it's actually made in China, because it's just that the supplement broker is in America. Mm. And so they use a loop around. Some others, bigger companies, manufacturers, like reputable ones, like I think High Tech produces some good formulas and products. They have a ton of brokers out there too. But again, I wouldn't work with brokers. I would go direct to just a real manufacturer. You can ask them, like, hey guys, do you actually produce your stuff? And I actually always ask them for pictures. So I ask them for pictures while my product's being produced. And I also ask them for a tour of the facility.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And if you don't want to go there and fly out and shell the money, just have them like just be like, hey, like, we have modern technology. Can we do FaceTime? I just want to see what your facility looks like. It's just a simple walk around, and you'll be so surprised how many, like, it catches them off guard, because most people just don't ask them ever for any paperwork, any of that stuff. So make sure you're not dealing with a broker. Make sure that they want to add you as an added insured on their insurance coverage. And then make sure they send you all their certifications, and that on their certifications, it's their name, not another like a parent company. Cause then you can't really always enforce quality. So those are you have to do some shopping around, and you have to know who you're dealing with. But those are the just general guidelines.
What, just out of curiosity, what does that mean, an added to the insurance?
Yeah, so basically what that means is, if you're a supplement company, you need to have your own general liability and product liability insurance. And then when you're, what helps too is when you're working with a manufacturer, when you're outsourcing it. So there's two types of supplement companies. Some supplement companies, like, they're really big, and they're doing like, they're like some of the most established ones that have their own manufacturing facility. So they buy their factories. So they have one insurance, right? But for most of us, like, we have a product, we do all the legwork, and then we work and partner up with another manufacturer. The question really is where does liability fall if someone gets sick or ill? So the liability, if it's something that the manufacturer did, like if the manufacturer sends you a batch that it's not correct or is underdosed or someone gets sick from it, who is blamed? Like, who is liable? Because you're outsourcing that work, or you're partnering up. Like, in our case, we partner up with another manufacturer.
Yeah.
So an added insured means that when that manufacturer has their own insurance, that you are covered in that insurance as well.
I see.
You have to ask them though for it, because they won't do it. You have to be like, hey, can I be on your added insured? Just make sure you do that. That way you're covered double. And it just, it just helps out in the worst case scenarios. But definitely get I know a lot of guys, and I want to get to this too, but you start a supplement company, a lot of people, I ask them, like, hey, they come to me for investment and stuff, and I ask them, oh, what's your insurance like? And they never have gotten insurance, and it blows my mind. Like, you should definitely get insurance, and you should have your you'd be on the added insured of your manufacturer. That's you definitely need to do that.
Yeah, that makes total sense. So you talk to these guys, you get this product put together. Mm-hmm. Is there a way for you as the company owner to then double check to have this tested to make sure that what's in it is what they claim?
Correct. Yeah. So you would ask them for a certificate of analysis. So they will send to you like what's in there is actually in there. Now, the problem with that thing, though, it's good to have, but they're doing it internally, so they can just say whatever they want to just say that they met label claims. So the best thing to do is to actually send out a run of the random batches to an analytics company that will actually run the batches for you. Now, it is super expensive, and you have to, like, you know, kind of the way the costs are not. But for me, like I knew that if this doesn't work, the product doesn't work, like I'm going to hang. So, and it's just the right thing to do. So all of our badges, from every batch that we make, one of the batch, so every time we get shipped, just gets sent to, you know, a third party that I've partnered and that we work with. And there has been times actually where I've shipped the batch back because it hasn't just met the label claims.
Really?
Like, it's been
really?
Like, yep, it's been like 3-4. So what happens then is then we I've actually switched manufacturers like twice now.
Wow.
And I don't give them a second chance because it's just not worth it.
Yeah.
So this happens, but for the most supplement companies, one thing people have to recognize, when people say the dietary supplement industry is unregulated, what that really means is that we have regulation, but it's retroactive, which means you're not going to face any fines or penalties or any – people are not going to investigate you until something bad has happened.
Hmm.
So if you can fly under the radar, you can do whatever the hell you want. Like you can make your supplements at home. People don't have insurance. People don't have any – like people are making all this crazy stuff. And so is it legal? No, but you can get away with it and you're not going to get investigated until someone really reports you. So a lot of people do some like really crazy stuff, and a lot of manufacturers, when they know they're working with a startup, they're not going to give you a price break, and also not going to always have the same amount. So now there are some supplement companies that will just not have the ingredient at all, and we've seen this not only with startups, but we've seen it with bigger brands that have gone bust, you know, because of this. But you have to. In our case, it was just a few milligrams, but it made me really uncomfortable. So there's going to be a few times that people have noticed where, quote unquote, it says as it's been out of stock, and what that means is you have to basically just throw away your whole batch, and that's super expensive. But you have to put away a capital, what I call a capex, which is extra capital to account for that you have to get rid of inventory. You're not going to be able to sell all of it. It's just the name of the game.
Wow.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit more now, once again, because you're kind of handling all aspects here and going in so many different directions. Tell me a little bit more about what you've done with marketing, because this is an area where I think you have been exceptionally creative. You know, I think that you know, for you guys, you probably all listened at home to the episodes of Bodybuilding Nerds where we do the Unsung Heroes segment, where Prady has people writing in, telling their stories. And a lot of times they're amazing stories of people overcoming great things, and you are basically sponsoring them. You're giving them product for free for sharing their stories. I think that that's such a great thing because it's more than just a sales pitch. You're, like you said, you know, you're getting people involved. And I feel like for some of these people too, it's been really cathartic to be able to share their story, you know, on a larger platform. This is only just one little thing you're doing though. Tell me more about everything that you're doing with promotion and how that's helped with the product.
Yeah, man. So one of the things that we kind of talked about this too is about getting customers involved. But one of the things I noticed early on, because I'm really in tune with just like reading a ton about business and entrepreneurship, and I work with a lot of other VC companies to invest in other, you know, in other type of sectors. And one thing I've noticed specifically with the field of dietary supplements is that there's no brand loyalty, man. Like I was actually looking at my own like closet, and I have like a pre-workout from one brand, then I had a glutamine product from another, then I had a creatine product from another, and like a protein from another, and then I would just switch out brands all the time. And that's really unique, because look at other industries like say clothing or even, you know, cars. Like people are very loyal to their brand. It's very hard to get them to shift. Whereas in our case, like the dietary supplement industry, people just use like literally like any brand that they can get their hands on. That's a good product. You start using, and I do the same. And I thought that was really interesting, because what that means is there's opportunity for new brands to penetrate the market and do really well. And we see new brands spring up and just like dominate. I mean, we see like brands like Redcon One, and they're like killing it. And they're new. But what it also means then is that there's no brand loyalty, and that your company can go bust right away, because people can just switch, right? And one of the reasons being is that we have no intellectual property in this industry. What that means is when I produce a product in other industries like software or something like that, like there are some patented or something that's my trade secret. So right now, say for instance, I'm selling, say I have like C4, Cellucor products, doing great, man. They're hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue. If I want to know their trade secret, I just turn the bottle around, and that's the trade secret, right? So that's it.
Yeah.
So, and why that's interesting is because anyone can just do it. So what that basically means, like I can literally just call up a manufacturer right now and produce C4 at home, and I can sell it, and then I have C4. So why that's interesting is that means that you have to do something else and unique if you want to stay in this industry. And so my goal always with Azoth, when I started off, I was like, I don't only want to create a good product that people use, now and then. I want to create a brand. And that takes, number one, it takes more time and more vision, because you're not going to see the ROI right away.
Yeah.
But my litmus test for that was super simple, man. So I'd go on Instagram and then go on different fitness brands. And what I do is I put my hand on the handle name, and I would try to guess what company it was. And yeah, sure, you can see like the branded like stuff on their posts. But what I noticed, man, like the types of posts they were making, whether it's the Instagram model shots or any of this, like these memes and stuff, I wouldn't know what brand is what. They were all doing the same stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought it was like crazy, man. I was like, wow, like all the brands are doing the exact same stuff. And there's got to be like, what that basically means is if one of these brands dies, no one's going to miss them, right? Mm. I mean, we've seen bigger brands just disappear. I mean, one big brand I know, like, I used to lose a lot was like, say, Prime Nutrition. They're still around, but like, no one's talking about them anymore, and like, no one cares that they're gone. Or like, Gasparri had a huge bust, like, where like, not a lot of people use their products, and now they're back. So, and it's strange, like, no one misses them. So, I wanted to be, without sounding cheesy, I want people to miss me while I'm gone. and the only way to do that is to create a brand. So what I wanted to do is, I want people to, number one, know what Azoth stands for. So, when the nootropic company, when the nootropic formula is not there anymore, maybe there's another FDA that says, now this is illegal. Or if the product doesn't work, the brand always stays. And one of the things that I wanted to do was to get customers back involved, get them back into the driving seat. So that's what really, I started off the Unsung Heroes contest. And we, we sponsor people. I sponsor people not just with a bottle. Sometimes it's 6 months supply. Sometimes I've given people a year supply. There are some people from Unsung Heroes I still sell in a bottle, like two bottles every month.
And I don't know how you can afford to do that. It sounds like you give away more than you sell.
I do. And the answer is, yeah, I do. So I do. We don't actually retain much. But what actually happens is strange, because anyone look at this is like, probably, you're crazy, man. Like, what the hell are you doing? You're giving away all these bottles. Like, Unsung Heroes, if people think about it, it's like, where's the ROI with that? Because I even told Veej, like, dude, you can remove like the commercial from B&R. I don't want the commercial. Just have Unsung Heroes, because I know you guys' time is valuable. You're reading the story for 2 minutes. You don't need to have the commercial in there. And that sounds ludicrous. Like, you don't want to talk about your coupon code or your discount code and stuff like that.
Which we still put it in anyway.
Yep. I know you guys do. So I 100% appreciate it. But that's one thing I told them early on. And the reason why is because it's a longer play. Because I know that when people feel part of the brand, then they feel like we care. And we really do. And I think that's where we start seeing the ROI, back. And it might not happen. Like, you're not, gonna be, making millions of dollars right away. If that's your goal, like that, this strategy is definitely not for you. But if you're someone that wants to create a brand and that you want to create something that's meaningful for people, where they're going to be like, really like be bummed out, like if you're not there anymore and they feel an emotional connection, then that's cool. Like every single winner from Unsung Heroes, like I almost follow up with them all the time. There's one guy that we're like friends, and I talk to him like once a week. We just shoot the shit. Two of the guys now, I've brought him as sponsored athletes, and that type of interpersonal camaraderie is what drew me to bodybuilding. So that's what I want to bring back in the supplement field. So that's what we're doing with marketing and branding. So you won't see us doing like some of the stuff that other supplement companies do, not because those things are bad or so. I want to do something different, and I want to create something that has staying power, man.
Right on. So I feel like myself and probably a lot of the listeners at home that aren't involved with producing supplements right now, that we can relate to the strategy of working within the industry, doing podcast commercials and, putting things together like Unsung Heroes. That kind of makes sense. Something beyond my scope of understanding is the bigger market. You're talking about getting into large companies on their shelves. How do you go about that?
Yeah, man, that's a whole different world in itself that I was like introduced to. Number one, you have to. There's different ways to do that. So the first way to do it is to get through trade shows. So you sign up with those, and you can get your product in front of like different buyers. That's one way to do it. The second way to do it is and this is sound crazy to people, but you can like literally go on like, you know, LinkedIn or connections that you have and find who the regional buyers are and just figure out a way to set up a meeting with them. I think that's going to be a way. And, you know, as strange as it may sound, you think that those people are like so flooded with calls and stuff. They, honestly, they aren't, because so many people are afraid to just they think they don't have a shot with it. That they don't even try. And that's just the thing that I don't know. That's one thing that I've noticed early on is that people just don't execute. So I did that a few times, man. I'd make what was really hard, man, getting into the smaller mom and pop retailers. I could not reach them, and I couldn't, like, they would not respond. And it was really hard. Yep. It was really hard for me to sometimes get in touch with them because they're so busy handling a lot of stuff. But it was easier for me to talk to a buyer from CVS than it was actually. Yep. And as strange as it sounds, I was able to get a buyer of CVS like in my first call, and he was like, "Yep, come over, man. Let's talk about it, and let's talk about strategy about how to get you in into stores." That one was easier than a lot of the you know, smaller kind of the bodybuilding type of mom and pop stores that are doing actually really well right now. But yeah, it's still hard for me to get in that penetrate that audience, and that's why people have noticed like, "Hey, like I don't see you in like the different bodybuilding stores, but I've seen you in convenience stores. Like, how the hell did you do that?" And it's because as crazy as it sounds, it's been easier for me at least to get my foot in the door because I just went for it. And that's another thing I want to talk about too. Just sometimes you have to go for stuff, and a lot of us shoot for kind of the average because we think it's safe. Yeah. I disagree with that. I think average is not safe. I think average is the most riskiest thing to do because there's so much competition, man. Like, there's so much competition for average. I always relate this to get a little humor, but it's like when you're going in the bar and you see like a girl who's like really good looking and she's like maybe a 6 or a 7 on a good looking scale. And then you have a girl who's like at a 9 or a 10, like a lot of guys will like crowd the girl who's like a 6 or a 7, and not a lot of people will go up to the 10s. And it's like strange. And it's because a lot of guys don't think they have a shot, not knowing that the kind of the person in the middle of the pack has so much, you have so much competition, it's hard to actually, win. So I always tell people, if you're going to think anyway, think super big. And the crazy thing about it is that you might achieve it, and you might achieve it quicker and faster because you're the only one trying for it. A lot of us try only for the middle of the pack things. And I definitely commend all the listeners, like, if you have a goal like, "Oh, I want to try this because it's easier," don't. Just skip something and go for the bigger picture. That's what I did. I was like, I wasn't getting into smaller retailers. I was like, kind of screw this. I'm literally just going to walk in. I walked into my CVS and I was like, "Hey, who's the buyer at the store?" And the woman was looking at me. She's like, "What are you talking about?" I was like, "Who buys your products? Like, can I get a contact information?" She called the manager over and he was like, "Yeah, how can I help you?" I was like, "I have a product. I'd be really interested to get, you know, talk to someone about bringing this product on the market." He's like, "Cool. Here's the contact information." Wow. I drove down the next day and bam, I had a first meeting.
Wow. Now yeah, I just couldn't see that. Sorry, yeah. Sorry to stop you here. And that right there. Yeah, I couldn't picture that. I'm sure the manager was even kind of confused for a minute.
Yep, they were all really confused. And the thing he told me after, because you know, we were just talking and shooting the shit after, he's like, "Dude, like, you know, it's funny because like no one actually."
Yeah.
I sit here and like I actually don't have a lot of work. I just sit on my computer all day because no one calls me. And I was like, "Dude, that's wild. That's crazy." And it's because most people don't try. And I want this from this. I want people to get this. The one thing that you got out of this podcast is like, look at it like from like kind of what I'm trying to say. The story is just like, go try for the big things. You might just get it. Wow. So
let me ask you, how much sleep do you get a night? What do you require? And what do you need to get at night in order to be productive during the day?
So, yeah, so I guess one of the things, I don't sleep a lot. So that's for sure. So I actually, since a child, I never required much sleep. So right now I run usually in about 3 hours or 4 hours
a night. Are you serious? Wow.
Yeah. And I don't sleep every day. And that sounds crazy to people, but yeah, I actually don't. I don't sleep every day. Now, this is also a slightly genetic thing. Cause like I said, like growing up, I just couldn't sleep long. So it was always like 4 or 5 hours max. So I just keep going. So it definitely helps me with running all these ventures and businesses. But I do want to say, like, one thing is, to no matter how busy you get or whatever, like, definitely take care of your health. To everyone, like, definitely do your cardio, go do your weight training, eat clean. Like, that stuff is going to be huge like factor into, like we talked about, one of the people that stay the longest are the people who can endure the most. And you're not going to endure a lot if you get sick, because like there's a lot of like stress and shit come your way when you have like you're running businesses and projects, and you know, there's so much going to be coming your way. So if you're healthy and able to handle that more than most the average person, they're not taking care of the diet, you're going to be able, your staying power is going to be way longer. So I definitely credit my my ability to be productive, because I was always I always took care of my health, and I don't try to ever miss like training sessions no matter what happens, because I feel like it definitely helps me. I love training, but it also helps me be more productive. So I don't get much sleep, but that doesn't mean people should not sleep. Do whatever it takes to be healthy. And I think that's the huge takeaway.
Yeah, no, I know that, you know, the less sleep you get, the more hours you can be productive. Personally, I can only do that so long before I get burnt out. That's why I wanted to ask, but I'm honestly surprised at that answer. 3-4 hours, man. I would be wrecked if I did that. What do you do to unplug? Because I know that for me, the busier I get, the more I understand that I need to have some type of a downtime, some type of a balance in there.
Yeah, for me, like my unplugging, honestly, like any free time I get is honestly just spent with weight training, or I spend time with my family. That's a trade off sometimes you're gonna have to make. Like when you do, and again, this really depends on where you are in your life and like what kind of projects you're taking on.
Yeah.
But like in my age, like when I just started my first business when I was 12 years old, and I've been creating several businesses. This is as is actually my 36th business that I've done.
What did you do? What was the first one?
Dude, I used to sell off-market shoes that Nike used to produce, and like they dump them in third world countries. And I used to go to India to visit my grandparents, and I'd found this in this village. They would dump their shoes that they would produce, real Nike shoes, and it would never come on the market. And I was like, dude, there's a huge market for this, like back home. So I'd come and sell them. Yeah, small business that I started, and
that's
crazy. I was just hustling. Yeah, so
that's crazy. At 12.
Yes, at 12. So I started early. But there's one downside to that, and you know, a lot of people are like, oh, like probably you've seen like the success. Number one, I have way more. I never talk to people about much about success as much as I do about failure, because that's sometimes more important. It paints a bigger picture. When I think about my life so far, it's about failing my way to success. Same way with Azaz, like the first product did great, but we failed because we got taken out and I lost all the money. So, but you keep on going. I think that's a key thing, man.
What would you say your success rate is?
Probably about like, it's probably like 10%, but you get more, you get more successful when the first time you hit your success. And this is one thing I tell people is like with business, you can be wrong all these times, but you only got to be right once. So keep trying. And if you write that once, you're going to hit the kind of jackpot, and you're going to be able, what's going to happen is going to attract more and more and more and more business to you. And I think that's important. But again, the trade-off though, and what I was getting at earlier, is I had to forego, and like in my a younger age, like when I was in college and high school, and I didn't have the party life in college. I didn't have that life. So people talk about like how much they had a blast and like they did all this stuff in college. I couldn't do that. I never drank in college. I never went much out. I was just in my dorm room, like working on my business. And I got a lot of heat from that, from my friends and stuff. But at that point, that's what I wanted to do. But what happens when you get to a point where you're working on yourself and your own personal development, other people around you are not always working on their self-development. And what happens then is that you don't become lonely, but you get kind of alone. And a lot of bodybuilders will understand that, and people into, into fitness, because when you start like dieting and like training and you have a certain lifestyle, other people in your life that you're hanging out with, like kind of in the mainstream, they're not doing those things. So you kind of become different than them. And when you take that to the extreme, when it's not just your dieting and training, but all parts of self-development, it becomes like definitely harder. So I spend a lot of time honestly by myself thinking about what I want to do next. And it does take a hit for my downtime, my social time. Now, again, this is the way that has unfolded for me. Because I wanted to, I was just working at a little bit of a really fast rate, but this is how it's unfolded for me. But I never go by maxims. I never tell people, oh, this is what you need to do to produce X. It's just like, this worked for me. This is how it's unfolded for my life. So my downtime is not a lot, but it's maybe an hour or two a day where I get to work out, man. That's my private time. That's my church, man. That's what I love to do.
Right on. And something that you hadn't told me until, like, I literally just found this out last week. Now, this is back a year ago, but you actually turned pro in bodybuilding in a natural division.
Yes.
You never talk about this, by the way. I think that I try to stay, you know, as humble as I can, but I'm excited to share my pictures and my progress. And even if I don't do great at a contest, I still want to post those pictures. Like, I never see anything from you in this regard. So are we shocked?
Yeah, man. I was just kept kind of a low profile. I don't know. I kind of do stuff because it kind of was for my own self-development and happiness. It was like a personal goal that I had set. For me, it was to go pro one day in bodybuilding. I started bodybuilding when I was 16 years old, and I went on stage as a teen. And I knew when I walked on stage, I was like, this is what I want to do with my life. Like, that you walk on stage and there's some feeling that you can't. And a lot of people why are you doing this? Why are you like in this posing trunks and like this stupid? But they don't, because I can't describe the feeling that you get when you're on stage. There's something about it that just clicks. And so my goal at that young age was like, my biggest dream was to turn professional in bodybuilding. So I competed in the OCB. I wanted to turn pro. It took me a long time to do. So I ended up winning my first show. I ended up winning junior in the teen class, and then I ended up winning a lot of the divisions and the weight classes, but I could never take the overall, always placing second and third and all over the place. And so last year, stuff just clicked. And it was crazy because it was not a time where I was actually, usually I prep about 25, 26 weeks ahead of a show, and I have a full like real off season and everything. This time it's like 9 weeks before. I was like, yep, I just want to do the show. Something just said to me, like, I just want to do the show. I'll just jump in it. I wasn't even in good shape or anything. I just went for it. And ended up winning the whole thing. And that was fantastic, man.
Well, you may not have been in good shape to start, but I just saw your pictures and you looked outstanding, man. Yeah, just awesome taper, really nice muscle bellies, really cool shape. I think that those are definitely the things that that got you the win there. I mean, you looked really good, really small waist. You also got injured though, right? Now, when did this injury happen? And how did that fit into this prep? And guys, we're kind of shifting focus here, coming to the end of the show. I wanted to get a little bodybuilding in here, so bear with me.
Yeah, man. So it was just like after starting my prep. So I had right before I started my prep, I got I had a smaller injury in my knee, and it required some surgery. So they went in there and cleaned some stuff up. I just never felt it. It was it's felt okay. Got the surgery done, and like life moved on. Then during prep, I started noticing like something wasn't right with my knee. I was like, oh, maybe it's because I'm losing whatever. I just didn't focus on it, which is bad in my regard. I started doing some. I like doing cardio outside for sprints. I prefer that over running on a treadmill or on a step mill. Okay. It was crazy, man. I was just like kind of jogging, and like my knee literally just collapsed. And it was not a pretty picture. So I ended up tearing my MCL, my ACL completely, and and also tore a lot of the cartilage. So what that required was a full surgery, where like most ACL repairs, but what they need to do is they take it from your patella tendon, they take that tendon out and they put that in there.
Did they use it from the patella tendon from the same knee?
Correct. Yeah, okay. It's from the same knee. So it was in the middle of the prep, and I was like, well, shit, what do I do? Because what happens when you actually screw up your ACL is that you lose the mind muscle connection, and you suffer some nerve damage. So you can't, what's weird about it, man, you don't know where your leg is anymore after the surgery. So I don't know where, like, we have the sensory thing, right, where we know where our body is in relation like to our mind and space. And you lose that when you have an injury like that. So I couldn't feel my leg. I didn't know what was going on. Like I would walk and I could only feel my left leg. I didn't feel anything anymore. Mm. But I was like, you know what? I can still, luckily for me, I'm blessed. I'm bottom heavy, so I'm blessed with bigger quads. So that helped me out tremendously. I was like, I'll figure out a way. And then right closer to the show, I went in just for a checkup, and a doc was like, all right, we're just going to check it out. What's going on? And what they found was it had actually, the surgery had failed.
What?
So, so the whole surgery failed. So they had to do the whole thing again, man.
They did it again, and this is still before the show?
Yep. Yeah, so I got two surgeries before, and this was, like, really getting close now. And I was like, shit, like, how the hell, like, am I going to compete? I was on crutches, and, yeah, so it's funny. It was just a few weeks. I mean, I started prepping, and still keeping on with my prep and stuff. And, it wasn't perfect. It wasn't great, and I knew it was dealing with a handicap. So the hardest part was doing cardio, because how do you do cardio without your legs? So, I did just improvise, use the stationary bike. And what I did, though, was an extreme like diet for me to just get in shape. I was already behind because I in the hospital, you don't, it was like a little harder because I lost some days there, but stayed on my diet. But then I just had to reduce my calories like to some extreme levels.
Wow,
just to lose weight. So, yeah, so it wasn't the most healthiest thing in the world, but bodybuilding isn't. Yeah, so it was that, and it ended up working out, man. Sometimes on the stars are aligned, but this takes it full circle too, man. In my mind, I was like, look, I've made a commitment to do the show, and no matter what, I'm going to do it and stick it through. And like every single time in my life, it's always paid off. And sometimes it doesn't pay off right away. Like, you'll stick through something and it will fail. Like, it won't work. But what you don't know is that when you succeed the next time, it's because you failed the last time and you learned something from it. So every time I fail, like I told you, I've had a very small success rate. The 90% of the times that I've failed have what's gotten me to the 10% success rate. So every single time that I've succeeded and I've heard about other people succeeding, it's because they have this desire and this appetite to never, ever give up and to be the last man standing. And so for me, it was just like, there's no doubt in my mind. I remember I like had to get my tan on and I barely stand. And so I figured out a way to help get my family to help me out. And yeah, it was pretty brutal to get it all done. But you know what? I did it anyways. And it's been the best moment of my life. Like when they called me backstage and you know, I won my pro card. That's a moment that no one can ever take away from me. And that's, it makes me emotional thinking about it. So it was the best time of my life, man.
That's amazing. Yeah. I had ACL replacement on my left knee.
Got it.
And it took all the muscle away. Like, it's amazing how fast your quad can shrink just from having the surgery, like within a couple of weeks, man. That's why I'm so blown away by that. And so many people have to go through just months and months of extensive rehab just to get that function back and to get the muscles to fire. You didn't have months and months, and you were back on stage in no time. It really is crazy. Are you planning on competing at all as a pro here in the future? I mean, I know your hands are full, but you don't sleep, so you got the time.
Hey, no, I definitely am. It's the question of like, which show I'm picking out to do. Okay. So it's probably going to be the end of this year, around October or early next year. So I'm trying to pick out a show right now and trying to see, going to plan it for it, because, you know, at the pro level, it's like, it's not like your shape and your size and all that stuff is cool, but it won't like get you to win. So it's really about, you know, at the natural level, it's just the conditioning. It's just freaky, man. Like, it's just freaky. Like, these guys are getting like bone dry. So you got to, and it's not even about the size at all. So I have to step the gas on, just get my conditioning up to peak. So I know it'll take me a lot of weeks to do, but I'll know like close to the summer whether I'm going to compete this year or not. But I'm definitely going to do it, because otherwise I end up losing my pro card. And I definitely don't want to do the whole thing again, man. So yeah, nice. You have 2 years to compete but once you get your pro card in the OCB, and then otherwise you lose, you got to do it again. You got to qualify again.
Okay. Well, I think that this is all good news, because I mean, like I said, you've got that shape, you've got some good muscular size. Conditioning is something you can control. So I think that with your mindset, there's no question in my mind, you'll be able to pull this together. You got to do us a favor though. You're going to have to post some pictures. You're going to, when this happens, I want to see some social media out there, not for you, but for us.
All right, man. All right. I'm still a little behind with the whole social media thing. I'm still trying to, I'm an old soul, man. So I never got the hang of it much, but I'll definitely do that, and I'll make sure to tag you.
All right. I appreciate it. You know, you've really shared a lot with us today, and I really appreciate it. If I can ask for just one more piece of advice, if you could send something to everybody out there, you know, they might, like we said at the beginning, they might not be looking to start a supplement company, but I get the feeling, and a lot of people I talk to, that people all want to do something more than they're doing now. What more could you share with them?
100%. I will share an advice that's not given a lot. Experience is overrated. What counts in life is bravado, just going for it. And I don't say experience is not important. I think it's overrated. I think a lot of people look at experience and let it cripple them. Like, oh, I can't start a supplement company because I don't know anything about business. Oh, I can't start podcasting because I don't know how to operate a mic. It's like crazy. People have all these barriers and these blocks.
Yeah.
The biggest risk in life isn't doing something. It's not starting. Like, you learn life and you learn the lessons and you become successful by doing. You can definitely get a lot of advice from podcasts and reading. I mean, I think there's tons of good information out there, but you don't learn until you're out there doing, until you're out there doing and doing and failing and failing and failing and failing your way until you become successful. So I tell everyone, become obsessed with execution. I think that's going to take you super far. And I think that is a big lesson that I learned early on from my own father. It was something that he passed on to me. It was like, you know, you might not have a lot, and you might not have all the all the resources, but one thing you can do is you can execute and you can start. And I commend every single person that's kind of had a project like on the back, like, oh, I want to eventually get into blogging, or I eventually want to talk to my boss about a raise, or I eventually want to start this kind of side project, whatever it is. Do me like a huge favor and just literally start it. Like, after you listen to this podcast, like, I want everyone to start what they're doing. And you might not know everything about it yet, but that's fine. Like, you will feel anxious. You will feel anger. Like, you'll be like afraid, like, what's going on, but that's okay. Like, dive in it. Because sometimes that you only find out what's at the bottom of the pool once you've taken the plunge. And I definitely go ahead and start it. And I will, there's so many, times I've spoken to people at the top and who've been successful. When they started out, they just didn't have all the answers. But you just go for it. Don't be scared. What's more important in life and what's going to take you furthest in life is not necessarily all the experience, about bravado, that you know you can do it. And you have to have guts. And that's going to separate you from starting and succeeding, or from being someone who just talked about it.
I love it. So let everybody know how they can reach out to you. Let them know how they can find your company. And, I know you're not a big social media guy, but let us know about the social media stuff too, please.
Sure. So people can actually find out information about Azoth. We're a nootropic company. We're actually coming up a couple of new formulas very soon. If you go on seekingazoth.com, SEEKINGAZOTH.com, at the bottom, you'll find all of our contact information. You'll see an email address and a phone number, and you can text and email those, and I will personally respond to all those. And people can find us on Instagram at seekingazoth.com, or you can look me up on Instagram. Just put in my first and last name, PRADYTEWARIE, and you'll find me. But I'm responsive through all those channels. And I definitely invite, if you have more questions, you're like, hey, like, Freddie, I want to start a company. Like, can you just give me some advice? Can you give some references, or can you tell me what to do or whatever? Just like, I'm more than happy to share, because a lot of us in this industry are afraid. They think that when you share something, that less of it is available for them. I disagree with that. I think there's enough wealth and success and happiness for everyone to enjoy. So I will, that's why people are like, pray, why are you giving all this information for free? Why are you doing that stuff? And it's like, I don't think that it doesn't threaten me, and no one should ever think that. If we live in a different mindset of abundance, like, there's enough for everyone, and that's how I see the world. And I'm more than happy to share as much as I can.
Ah, I love it. I've got an interview with Austin Levine, who happens to be one of your sponsored athletes that we're going to go to next. When did you meet Austin?
Dude, Austin is like a hustler, man. He literally just contacted me, and we're talking about contact information. He just found me, found us somewhere online. I think it was either a PricePlow article, and then he just like Googled, and he sent me an email. He's like, hey, I want to know more about the company, and I hear about this. He went on our website, and he read some of the Unsung Heroes. He said, I have a story that I'd want to share, and I was like, hey, man, yeah, definitely send it over. We have this BNR contest that we do, and he sent me over that story, and I was like, and I just kept talking to him back and forth, and I was like, look, you have this amazing background, you love to work hard and hustle, and there's more that I want to do than just like give you a bottle. And you read these stories, man, of like all these people that are coming on BNR with sharing their stories, and at the end it's like, yeah, we'll just hook you up with a bottle. It just sounds so like minuscule, and I feel almost like bad whenever like we read the stories, like, yeah, they're hooking up with a bottle of Azoth. I feel almost like bad about it, but that's not why I sponsored Austin. I wanted to just do more, and I wanted to help him in his career. He has like tons of potential, and I recognize a lot of stuff that I was going through when I was younger in his story, and that's how I connected with him, and I want to help him get to the next level in his career, in his MMA. And if that's going to help him, having a sponsor background, giving some some financial support and some product, I want to play a part in that. And that, just even if it's a smallest part, I always feel honored if people are succeeding and they become really successful and they get even more successful than I can ever be. But if I played a small part in that, even if it's minuscule, man, that makes me happy.
That's awesome. And it's an awesome lead-in into the interview next. So we are going to get to that. Pretty, thank you very much for coming back, man. It's always a pleasure. And thank you for all the inspiration and everything, man. I really appreciate having you in my life. And it's watching you has inspired me to do more. So thank you.
Thanks so much, Scott, man. It goes both ways, brothers.
Guys, this has been Pretty from Azoth. We will be back in a moment.
You know what I need to get by.
Something for your mind.
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 Something for your mind.
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 Something for your mind.
Welcome back to Advices Radio. I'm Scott McNally, and with me today, we're going to do something a little bit different. I've got with me Austin Levine, Austin the Machine Levine. He is an MMA fighter and soon to be a boxer. Well, I guess technically you are, but soon you're going to have your first boxing match, right?
That's correct. Hey, first boxing match on Saturday.
Well, thanks for being with me, man. So Saturday is the first boxing match, you said?
That's correct. It'll be my first boxing match in Wisconsin, and hopefully, you know, it goes all well.
Right on, man. So, you know, I learned about you through over at Bodybuilding Nerds, one of our sponsors, Azoth, they sponsor you. And you had written up basically how your life had kind of led to where you are today. And I thought it was kind of a cool story, man. So I kind of wanted to share that. And also, you know, we have mostly a bodybuilding-oriented show. I thought it would be fun to step outside of that and kind of look at, you know, what you do, what your training's like, what your nutrition is like, and kind of compare and contrast that a little bit to what we do, you know, in our sport. So you're training today, right?
Yes, I have trained here in a couple hours.
Now, how often do you train? And tell me, what does that mean when you say you're training?
4 days a week, you know, I go down to Community Boxing Club. You know, we spar, we do the heavy bag. We do a lot of freaking conditioning, which I hate, but I love it at the same time. And then, you know, I'm always training during the week at home. I have a couple of younger brothers that also do boxing, so we spar here at home. But, you know, it's pretty simple. You know, we get there, we warm up, we wrap our hands, we do some jump rope. We go in the ring for 10 rounds, 10 three-minute rounds, you know, and we just have at it. And after that, we'll finish with some ab workouts, some core, and we go do a 2 mile run. I think it's a little over 2 miles, you know, which right now in this nice Wisconsin weather isn't too nice. But.
Oh God. You told me you're like in single digits or negative right now.
Yeah, single digits right now, which is definitely nicer than what it has been. It's been -13, -14 here lately. So
wow.
Anything above zero is pretty nice right now.
I was in Wisconsin just once, and that was on a trip to Lake Superior. You know, I'm in Detroit. I'd like to travel up north, and you know, along Lake Superior, we kind of hit Wisconsin for a minute, and that was really it. Are you in, where are you located, like northern or southern Wisconsin?
I'm in Loyal, Wisconsin. It's a southern, you know, kind of southern, close to the line. Not too much north at all, so.
Okay. Do you guys,
not too far.
Are there a lot of people in your community that are into fighting sports, boxing, and MMA?
No, none at all. I think there's a little over 1,000 people here.
Wow.
And I'm the only one from this area anyway. I drive over about 45 minutes to another town and train with them. So
really? Wow.
There's about 10 of us there at that class. So not too many of us really.
Do you guys do any type of resistance work with weights?
None. The Community Boxing Club doesn't, I mean, they have a weight set there, but I've been there for probably about 3 months now and I've never seen it used once.
Wow. So none of the guys are lifting weights at all?
None of them. I mean, there's not even a gym around here that I've not even able to go to and lift. So I just, you know, I'll do some push-ups or try to use my own body weight really.
Okay. Yeah. I've heard that a lot. I've heard a lot of guys who don't do resistance training. And then I know that there are guys that do. I've heard a lot of things that are, just non-traditional things that are kind of outside of the box. You know, tell me a little bit more about where you came from and how you got started in fighting, because I feel like your story is pretty interesting.
Right. Well, you know, I came from a rough past, you know, a lot of drugs in my family, abuse and stuff. And, it kind of molded me, you know, to be kind of this angry person always. You know, I got in fights at school all the time, and I hit high school in my senior year. My older brothers decided, you know, they wanted to start doing MMA. It was new to our town when I lived in Missouri. And I started training with them a little bit, and kind of, you know, I'd always liked fighting, but not always for the right reason.
Hmm. What do you mean by that? What's the right reason? Because for I think for a lot of society, you know, we look at fighting, we think of it as a real negative thing, and, you know, right, just the troublemakers are doing it.
Exactly, and that's how it was for me at first. You know, it was always trouble getting suspended or put in detention at school, but whenever they decided they wanted to do it, you know, it was just for they loved the sport, you know, it was something they wanted to do.
Hmm.
You know, career-wise, and they tried to get me to realize that, but, you know, I was stubborn-headed, and my first fight, I just went in just pure rage, hate towards, you know, my mother, my father, and that's what I kind of used as, you know, visualizing when I looked at the other guy.
Yeah.
And it worked, you know, I won my fight in 23 seconds, but after that, you know, I started training more, and I was like, oh, I'm going to do this again. Well, my coach, you know, he took me to the side, and, you know, he talked to me a little bit and told me about the history of the sport, you know, and how it was when he started doing it, and now it's just kind of something for me where I realize, you know, it's something I want to do for my family. You know, I want to make money doing this, you know, respect the sport, and just I have all this love for it now. So
what was it like for him? Because you got to remember, a lot of the people you're talking to now might not have. I mean, I think there is overlap, and I think that, you know, MMA is really popular, UFC is super popular. And so you probably do have some guys out there that are listening that get what you're talking about. But I myself, right, you know, I'm not a follower of UFC, and although, you know, I have a pretty good understanding of how things work from a nutritional side for fighters, it's not something that I'm really passionate about. So tell me a little bit about this respect that you have for the history and what that is.
Right. Well, you know, the sport really has evolved a lot, you know, from when it first started. You know, it used to be bare knuckle.
Mm.
There was no rules. You could grow and shot. You know, it was just a pretty brutal sport, you know, and so not many people, you know, followed it when it first started. And, you know, it's grown to the sport where, you know, there's just a lot of respect, you know, towards the other person. You need to realize, you know, whenever you're standing across from that guy, you know, he wants to take your head off. But at the same time, you guys can sit there, you can bang it out for three to five rounds. And, you know, at the end of it, you guys just hug it out, and just this mutual respect. And I don't know, it's hard to describe, you know, it's just a feeling I have for the sport, you know, just the love that, you know, it's primal, it's competitive, it's who's the better guy. But at the same time, it comes down to a love and respect for each other. You know, you beat the crap out of each other, you know?
Yeah.
So it's hard to describe it. You know, it's just kind of like, you know, probably with bodybuilding, you know, you love it. You know, it's just the feeling that you have for it.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, I think that a lot of people get kind of locked in what you were initially talking about, and they think of fighting as being something that's just, you know, utterly brutal and coming right from a negative place. So you worked through that pretty quick, it sounds like, if you got through your first fight, and then you kind of shifted gears from there.
Yeah, you know, I trained 3 months for my first fight, and I just from a pure hatred point of, you know, I'm going to tear this guy's head off. I have so much hate, you know, anger to take out. And it worked, but at the same time, you know, as you get to fighting better guys, you know, you can't use hatred and rage as, you know, to get you through that fight, because it just doesn't work that way.
Why not? Why can't you? What do you need different then?
You need to find, for me, I just needed to find, you know, I want to train this the right way. I don't want to just go in there and just try to slug it out and use rage, because you black out, you know, it don't end well. You know, you go in there with a street fighter mentality, just doesn't work, because that guy, most of the time, isn't going to be coming from that. You know, he loves this sport. He wants to do this. There's not many people in our sport that just step in there just to want to fight. You know, they have the same motives. They want to do this as a career. Hmm. They take it very seriously, you know. And I fought a few people that just came in there just, oh, I can do this. I can fight. I fight on the streets all the time. It's different, you know. You train better than you are just a street fight. So
sounds like you're talking about technique.
Yeah, you know, it comes down to technique, a lot of that. You know, you got to have your head in the game, because you're always just angry. You're not really thinking, you're just doing. You know, you always need to try to be a move or two ahead of the other guy. It's like a chess match almost.
So when you go in, you know, it sounds like that first fight, I'm guessing it was probably like all adrenaline and all excitement.
I just took off across the cage, running at the other guy. it was ugly. Nick wasn't there. I just grabbed him and tried throwing him around. And luckily, you know, he didn't know what the hell he was doing either.
Yeah. Okay. So going into a fight now, you've got more experience. How many fights have you been in as far as MMA goes?
I'm 6-7 in MMA right now.
Okay.
I hold a heavyweight belt, and you know, it's something I want to keep doing for years to come. And I'm in talks to go pro with a couple guys back in Missouri, but I kind of still need to get that big fight under my belt to prove it to them. You know, let's go ahead and forward with this. So
where's your mind at now? What are you? Are you amped up? Are you calm? What's happening when you're about to start that fight?
You know, I used to get pretty nervous. You know, the nerves are always there.
Yeah.
Whether 100th fight or your first fight, they're, you know, they're still there. You just kind of learn how to control them a little bit more. You know, usually I'm pretty calm up until I'm walking down to the cage, right? You know, walking down the aisle to the cage, and nerves finally start setting in pretty good. And
yeah.
Once the door shuts, though, and you hear the lock shut, you know, your mind just kind of goes, it's time.
I guess it sounds like fight or flight.
Yeah.
That fight or flight mechanism.
I mean, you can't run away, so your brain just switches into training mode. And, you know, hopefully that training that you've put into it, you know, the dedication pays off for you, you know.
Interesting, man. It's such a different experience than what I'm used to. You know, when I think about my training and my competitions, what kind of weight are we talking that you walk around at? And then what kind of weight do you go into a fight weighing?
Heavyweight is what I fight at right now. I'd definitely like to go back down to, you know, middleweight or light heavyweight like I used to be, which is the 185-205 range.
Okay.
I'm sitting at like 230 right now, which is still pretty heavy for me. I don't like it at all. You know, I try to eat right, you know, chicken, salad, you know, red meats and stuff. But, you know, I cheat a lot. I enjoy my bags of chips or something, you know, which isn't right. But, you know, it comes down to, you know, you need to eat right. You know, whenever you don't eat right, you definitely feel it when you're training.
Yeah, I could imagine, because I imagine a lot of what you do, it there's a lot of endurance involved. And I know that my endurance goes down. If I were to eat a bag of chips, I'm definitely going to be holding more water, and it definitely would not be a good training experience.
Yeah, there's a couple times where I've ended up eating like a burger before training. You definitely pay for it. You feel it, even if it's a couple hours before training.
Yeah.
When it comes to cardio time, you're paying for that.
So for us in bodybuilding, you know, I just went to the gym. I ate food, big meal, basically, you know, carbs and proteins, right before I left so I could have that in my system. Started training about 45 minutes later. After that, I did my cardio, came home, and I immediately ate again. How far out from your training do you want to eat on average? What works for you?
Well, for me, I don't usually eat before I train. If I do, I'll eat like a little turkey wrap or something, you know, a little bit of lettuce, tomato, a couple slices of turkey on a tortilla shell and roll it up, which it's usually pretty good for me. But I usually don't try to eat anything before I train. After I train, I'll go ahead and I eat like a chicken salad or something, just something pretty light. I don't usually try to eat too heavy because I tend to retain a lot of weight. It doesn't come up easy for me anymore.
Okay. Yeah, it makes sense to me. I feel like if I were going to go run a marathon, I wouldn't want to eat a bunch of food right before I did that. It'd probably be like several hours, so I'd have enough time to digest. It sounds like that's what you're telling me, too.
Right. And when I go down to fight at my, you know, 205 or something, which I definitely plan on doing, I usually just, I don't eat much at all at that time. It's usually not the healthiest way to do it, but when it gets closer to fight time, I'm usually eating maybe a salad or two a day. Gets pretty rough.
Then how soon, when you weigh in, how much time do you have before you actually start a fight?
For MMAs, we weigh in the day before the fight. So afterwards, I usually go eat, you know, a pasta or something.
Okay.
Something not too bad. Just to get those healthy carbs and stuff back. But for boxing, it's definitely different. You know, we weigh in the morning and we fight at night.
Okay.
So for me, that's a pretty different. So I'm trying to watch what I eat up until weigh-ins, and then afterwards, I'm not exactly sure what I'm going to do being fighting that a couple hours later.
Right on. So you know, one thing, and this is kind of going back into your history, when you had written in your story, man, it was really touching because you talked about that anger that you had and you talked about, you know, how you kind of had been, it sounds like you had been shuffled around as a kid.
A lot.
And it's something, man. I feel like, you know, looking at the things that have happened in my life and, you know, seeing how that they've, you know, they've followed me, you know, it's things that I still deal with. For me, a lot of times bodybuilding is a way that I can kind of work through that stuff. Do you find that now that you've found fighting as being like a positive thing in your life, does that help you work through some of that stuff still then?
Yeah. I found it, you know, sparring and stuff, you know, I'm going with people I know, and fighting even in general, it's just it still is a way to take out some things, but it also just like clears my mind. You know, it's like when I'm doing it, I don't have anything to worry about. There's nothing going on, but, you know, me just doing what I love. So I was just like just a way to get away, you know, like people, they go on vacations to get away. You know, they don't have to worry about anything. For me, it's, you know, I go train, I go fight, you know, it's just a peaceful thing to me.
Right on. That makes sense, man. What other elements am I missing here? Because I feel like this is a topic that's so foreign to me. You know, if you were to tell an outsider about, you know, what you do and explain this to them, how would you explain this, the, you know, this sport? Because it's something, like I said, I think that myself and maybe some other people too, you know, we might not have a totally clear perspective of it.
Right. Well, fighting, you know, it's strength does play a factor. Your cardio plays a factor, you know, but it's also, like I said, it's like a chess match. You know, mentally, you have to be strong. You know, if you lose the match, I mean, it sucks. It's terrible. It definitely tears you up, but, you know, you have to be strong at the same time to turn back around and, you know, focus right away. Okay, what did I do wrong? This is what I got to do better. I mean, yeah, it's brutal. Just like a lot of people think, you know, it's pretty brutal sport. There's blood, you know.
Yeah.
But it's fun. I mean, it's an art. It's mixed martial arts, you know. So the people that love it, you know, they love it. But there's a lot of people out there that are never going to accept it, sadly, you know. I mean, they don't see what's the point of two guys or two girls going in there beating the crap out of each other.
Yeah.
I mean, well, but it, for me, it's, you know, it's truly, it's an art, just basically to me.
Have you ever gotten seriously hurt in a fight?
Not in a fight. You know, I've been knocked out, you know, two or three times, and that's pretty crazy if you've never been knocked out before.
Yeah.
It took seven fights before I, you know, ever went to sleep, and it was definitely a different experience. Not, you know, waking up and you're like, what the hell just happened?
Yeah.
But, I've been injured in training, you know. I had a shoulder surgery and a knee surgery, and they both came from training with people that just didn't know what the hell they were doing, really. You know, they try to put a submission, you know, like an arm bar. And they do it completely wrong, or a leg lock, and they torque it the wrong way, you know, and it definitely messes up stuff, you know? So.
Because when you're doing stuff on the floor and you're doing jiu-jitsu type moves, you guys can pretty much go 100%, right?
Yeah. Yeah. There's no letting back, you know, but when you're training with your teammates, you know, and you get that, you know, that leg lock or that arm bar locked in, you don't fully, you know, put it in and try to hurt the guy. You can, that's your teammate, but. You know, sometimes you get those jackasses really that come in there. They don't know what they're doing, and it's their first or second day, and they want to try to show off. And unfortunately, sometimes you're the one that pays the price for it.
So, is that the foundation then of the stuff you do on the ground? Is jiu-jitsu, or what is it?
Yeah, I've done American jiu-jitsu, Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I'm pretty good at both, you know. But what I really love is just the ground and pound. I love to just take people down, get in the dominant position and just pound their face in, really.
that's
what works best for me.
That sounds effective.
Yeah, it works.
If you're predominantly a guy who likes to get people on the ground, how do you feel about this? Because I feel like boxing now, that seems like that's going to be a real challenge for you.
Yeah, and that's what I really loved about it so much. You know, like I said, I saw Conor McGregor make the change over to boxing. And, I mean, he did okay for four rounds, but it's just something that, you know, I accept the challenge. I love the challenge of, I'm going to go in there and my opponent, he's 4-5. He's had 9 fights in boxing. And I love it because he knows what the hell he's doing. And I'm coming in here and I'm going to have to push myself to a level I've never been and do something that I'm not usually seen doing, which is standing up and fighting the whole time. So I feel that I can stand up and fight. But there, you know, if there's a lot of doubters out there, they're like, what are you doing? You know, you're not a boxer. Well, I'm going to go out there and, you know, I'm going to try to prove them wrong and show that, you know, I can stand on my feet and I can fight. You know, so it's just a whole nother challenge for me. And I love the idea of challenging myself even more.
Right on. I have to imagine, too, that in the long run, if you continued with MMA, it could only benefit you by having more skills standing up.
Exactly. You know, I found, you know, I've got a boxing gym and I also have my MMA team, Beast MMA, out of Missouri. But, you know, I'm up here in Wisconsin right now preparing for this. So I've been training at just a boxing gym. But, you know, I looked at it the same way. You know, I'm training with these guys. They're teaching me how to be better on my feet, quicker with my hands, you know, new combos. And I'm going to go back to, you know, Missouri. I'm going to show my teammates what I've learned. You know, and I look at it as, like what you said, it's only going to help me, you know, be better.
Can you use things like caffeine and over-the-counter stimulants before you fight? And is that something you would want to use?
Amateur-wise, they don't really look at it. You know, I've fought for promotions that don't even do, you know, pregnancy tests on women just to see if they are pregnant.
Wow.
But they just take their word for it. And I've fought guys who have been on steroids. Amateur-wise, they don't pay attention to a damn thing, really.
Okay.
They don't care what you use, which, you know, sucks. You know, if you're not juicing and you go in there and you fight someone that is, it's definitely going to be pretty tough on you. I don't know exactly why they'd want to, because I look at it as it might just make you slower. But, you know, I don't know. They don't pay attention to any of that stuff amateur-wise. I know when you hit that professional level, you know, there's a whole list of stuff that you can't take or has to be approved. So.
Okay. Are there any supplements that you found have helped you?
Yeah, you know, the Azoth, what I got from them, you know, it works amazingly. It helps motivate me. You know, it gets me ready for my day.
And I would just want to clarify for everybody who doesn't listen to Bodybuilding Nerds and doesn't know Azoth that it's a nootropic blend. It gives you kind of a mental alertness, but then there's also some stuff in there that kind of balances you out to kind of keep you calm. So I could see how that would be really good and probably help you to think a little bit quicker on the next move you need to make.
Right. You know, I've haven't had any negative experiences with this, and I love it personally. You know, I recommend it to, you know, all my teammates to go ahead and check it out, and, you know, everybody listen to go ahead and check it out.
Well, that's pretty cool. This is fun because, like I said, it's just so different. I'm not even sure exactly the questions I want to ask you, but I thought it'd be fun to bring you on and kind of see where you're at. So how old are you?
I'm 23 years old.
All right. And how old are your average fighters nowadays on the pro level?
On the pro level, it's pretty crazy. You're seeing a lot of older fighters now, you know, end up turning pro in their mid to late 30s even, you know,
okay.
which is pretty insane. But I fought, you know, 40-year-olds, I fought 20-year-olds, I fought 18, 19-year-olds, and it's all over the place, really, nowadays. But, yeah, you're seeing a lot of guys go pro now in their mid to late 30s, which you didn't used to see. So,
what are your limiting factors in a sport like this? Because I know with bodybuilding, you know, a lot of times time goes on, we get injured, we can't squat like we used to, knees go out, joints go out, and those are usually the first things that start limiting us. But we can continue bodybuilding well into our 40s and, you know, have good physiques still nowadays. What are the things for you? I mean, I know head injuries are a big concern.
Yeah, concussions really. Concussions are taking its toll on a lot of people now, and memory loss. You know, it really comes down to, you know, how you train. You know, there's a lot of people out there that train balls to the walls when they're sparring with each other, and, you know, you're getting knocked out in training now, you know. And I don't believe in training, you know, 100% when you're going at it with each other at 100% when you're sparring and stuff like that. You know, you just need to get that technique down. But it's kind of like bodybuilding. You know, your body eventually just, it starts to break down, starts to wear down. You know, you start to get injured a lot easier, and, you know, I guess it just depends on how you take care of your body. For me, you know, I've had a lot of surgeries. I feel it every day when I wake up.
Surgery's so, not related to the sport?
No, I've had a shoulder surgery that's related to the sport. The knee surgery was. But I've also had another two surgeries on my other shoulder that were from football in high school.
So. Oh, that'll get you. That's for sure.
Yeah. So I find myself trying to, you know, look at how I can eat better, how I can train, you know, just as hard, but a lot easier on the body. And, you know, I don't know. Just old age eventually gets you in MMA, really. Father time catches up.
So you said you're going to be doing your first boxing match this weekend, right?
That's correct. On the 20th.
Right on, man. Well, we wish you a lot of luck with that. Anything you'd like to say about that, or anybody you'd like to shout out?
Yeah, I'd like to go ahead and shout out to Azoth and Prady. I know I'm super excited to, you know, team up with them and be their first sponsored athlete. you know, I'd like to thank you for having me on the show. I Absolutely. Greatly appreciate it. It's, you know, first one I've ever done, so I wasn't sure what to expect from it, but it's a great experience, and hope that, you know, I can come back on sometime down the road. That'd be pretty awesome.
Absolutely, man. That'd be fun.
I'd like to give a shout out to Beast MMA. It's my MMA team down in Missouri, Community Boxing Club here in Wisconsin, and, you know, thank you everyone for listening.
Right on. Well, thanks a lot, man. We really appreciate it. Guys, I'm Scott McNally with Austin the Machine Levine. Spinning on that dizzy edge, I kissed her face and kissed her neck. I dreamed of all the different ways I had to make her glow. Why are you so far away? She said, I want you.
Voices Radio Network.